the stats, the salt, the sanity, and every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. Unfortunately, the stat man is dealing with a little electrical issue right now, so he's going to jump on in a little bit, and we'll get to him as quick as we can. But the guy who's got a nice flowing stream of electricity in his home right now, Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
What's happening? The lights are on. My fantasy championship trophy is right here. I've got all the visuals for us.
I'm glad, buddy. How's everything going today?
Good. Good. I can't complain. Russ, he's, I don't know if he's back. I don't know if he's got power. I know I put two goalie wins and a shutout up against him last night in fantasy. So I don't, maybe he's not here, which is very convenient.
Oh, looks like maybe we got him. Did we get him? Oh, look at that. He's sitting in the dark, but he's ready to go.
Also, I heard your little bullshit chirp about, getting goalie points on me at fantasy. I'm listening still. I'm in the dark, but I'm listening.
I love it. It's
like
a race to Sunday.
It's like that ominous, like, background, though. It's like that ominous thing,
me.
Like, you know, right before Batman appears behind the Joker. It's just ready to go. all right, well, we're going to lead this off. I said it to Russ before the show started that we have so much stuff that happened here today in the last 6 hours, it could fill up the entire show. So I want to get to it. But before we do, we have a fun new little segment on the show I'm adding today. It is called Fantasy Questions by Jillian's Boy Toy, because once a week I get a text from our friend Jillian Brown, her boyfriend, asking me a fantasy football question. And we love fantasy football. We all play it. That's really creepy, but we're going to go with it anyway.
It's all
I'm going to pass these along to you. That's fine. That's good. But I'm going to pass these along to you two. If you haven't been on this over the years of this show, Justin is the commissioner of the leagues. He is the all-knowing. And I love to give Russ fantasy questions because it gives him strange reasons to pull out the abacus and do the calculation of where it pays off better. So I have two trades for you guys. Both involve a receiver and a tight end. Obviously, one's going to be two more high-profile names. But I want to know to you, if you're looking to make this deal, are you making it, and what's your reasoning behind it? So your two options are: he possesses both tight ends. He's going for both wide, or at least one of these trades, both wide receivers. Would you go, Jay, with T.J. Hockenson for Jalen Waddle, or Greg Kittle for Stephon Diggs?
Okay, first of all, Jillian's boy toy. He has a name. Like, this is like so awkward. Like, we can, are we outing him or are we not?
No, his name is Mike. He's a great guy.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, so Mike.
Mike possesses
Jillian's boy toy.
I know. I mean, equal partners in a relationship. That's just weird. So Mike has both tight ends, correct?
He has both tight ends.
I don't know. I've got Diggs, man, and I think he's got a touchdown this year. Josh Allen just put up a stinker against, I think it was Jacksonville, like a 6-9 loss. This is disgusting.
I would have,
between Kittle and Hockenson, if you got a flex, keep both. I mean, Diggs doesn't have the volume right now. I don't know. I would stay pat.
Okay. Rusty, over to you.
So we know Hockenson's gone through his bye now. Do we know if Kittle's gone through his bye?
49ers.
I believe San Francisco's gone through their bye. I'll take a quick look for you.
I got it. I got it. What's
San
his face?
San Francisco's gone through their bye. There you got it.
I got it. Oh, that's my survivor pool.
He's got
pool.
Jimmy G.
No, Jimmy G's dead to me. That was like 7 years ago.
That was last week.
Arizona. No, that's not Arizona. Oh my God! Hang on. Someone say something interesting while I look for it.
So what I'm trying to get at here is, look, yes, most leagues you're only going to start one tight end. But if you're going to get into a situation where you only have one of them available, it makes sense to have both of them available. I generally go by, I try to control for position when I look at these kind of things. So if he's a tight end, yes, your tight end is going to score less, but how does he compare to other tight ends, right? I won't go into the exact math of what I use for, it's similar to like a Z-score calculation, but it's basically, hey, if you have tight end number five and they do significantly better than the replacement level tight end, that's way more valuable than like some run of the mill wide receiver two or three that you'll get, which is kind of what he's getting in return here. So yeah, you'll get more points per week possibly out of Waddle or Diggs, but you're getting better value over replacement keeping Hawk and Kittle. And oh, it's the NFL. Everyone gets hurt every week. unless he's in a dire need for a wide receiver. Yeah, I'd stand pat too. Or ask for more.
Okay, fair. Yes, the only one that I'm checking right now, the only one who hasn't had their bye week that I know of in this four-person trade is Jalen Waddle. And I believe Miami's had their bye, but I don't know that for sure. Everyone else in that trade, because I have Josh Allen, and they've had their bye already.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe – I don't know that the – I guess Miami doesn't get a bye this year.
Are we doing this whole like
bye? If they do, I'm not seeing it.
I just wanted to quickly comment that I'm in solidarity with Russ. I'm also going to pretend like I don't have power too? Yeah, it's this weird thing. I got no power either, so I'm trying to match Russ's ambiance
here. Are you messing with us, or did your power actually just go out too?
Yeah, it's power. I'm having power issues over here.
I legitimately don't know if he's being earnest with us or just being an ass.
No,
there's the answer.
Okay, I apologize.
I legitimately don't have power. I have a test this weekend that I can't study for because I have no Wi-Fi.
Mine is going to walk in and flip the light. Like, hey, Russ, what are you doing here, bud?
Yeah.
All right, so you hear it here first. It sounds like you should just stay put with the double tight and see what you get out of it. I agree. Diggs has looked a little questionable. Jalen Waddle plays for Miami, so take that with what you will. Kittle is still a part of a 49ers team that has the ability to be competitive, and Hockenson is the leading receiver on the Lions, so I know that's – take that with a grain of salt. It is – we're looking forward to Jillian's boy toys question next. I'm sure I'll get one here in the next couple of days. Moving on, we have news around the league, and there is so – originally this was supposed to just be – talking Aaron Rodgers and the fact that he's stupid, but there's so much else that's happened in the last couple days or the last couple hours that we can't not cover it all. So I'm going to reach into this bag and we're going to go with Jay. Cam Newton is a Carolina Panther again.
Oh, it feels good to do that again. I love it. I love it. He was in the stands for Auburn LSU. I forgot who Auburn played, and he just popped up in some like student section and he looked like he had some like jump to him. So I'm glad to see that he's ready to lead Carolina because Sam Darnold's like half dead now. So I'm a huge Cam Newton fanboy. I can watch Cam Newton all day long. I love the guy. So that's great news. I think it's the only good news that came out of the NFL this week.
It very well could be. It's no surprise here. I'm not a big Cam Newton fan. I have said for a long time over that he fits right in that thing of sheer talent, yes, he's got athletic ability. I don't see him as a top 15 quarterback. Therefore, a signing like this just tells me you got a second half of the league tight end or quarterback to play. He should be a tight end. Second level quarterback. And look, Carolina, they're not a great football team this year. McCaffrey is a spot start, it feels like, most weeks with injury. That's partly because they don't really have a lot else around him. Sam Darnold, take it what you will. I've always seen him as a talented quarterback, not a great quarterback, a serviceable quarterback, but more than likely right there with Cam in the second half of the league. So to me, it's like, okay, yeah, great. You brought a guy who spent most of his career here. You brought home a nice touching story. It'll sell some tickets for a while, but it doesn't improve your football team in my eyes. I didn't see you just make a quantum leap to, oh, there they go. The division's theirs. No, all you did was secure a quarterback who can move a little better than Darnold and, you know, is going to fill the seats because everybody already owns his jersey.
I mean, hey, I think you hit on the key point there at the end of, hey, this keeps fans coming to the games. which is what you need. Is he better than Sam Darnold today? Only because Sam Darnold's hurt, right? So he's probably better than what the alternative would be. Mm. He keeps the bus limping along. Yeah, they're still not going to be great, but it'll give people a reason to pay money to see the team in person. And that's half the business anyways.
Yep. They should bring back Luke Kuechly then. Absolutely. See if he's like ready to come out of retirement and come play.
And every other clear line, Steve Smith, bring back Steve Smith, bring back Musa Muhammad, bring back everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Give me some, bring, you know what? He's probably still playing. Bring Julius Peppers back for a little while.
Yeah. Julius Peppers. Tim Biakatsuka. Bring him back.
There you go.
Paul didn't play for the Panthers.
I love it.
No.
Damn it.
No.
Sorry.
I'd tell him to go get Jake Delhomme, but they already got Cam Newton, so you don't need a former quarterback. Moving over, this one was kind of when you heard he had a short list, you figured the Rams had to be on it. But Odell Beckham Jr., OBJ, which, by the way, did you guys see Bruce Arians' comments when asked about if they're getting OBJ or not?
Yeah, it's legendary.
Bruce Arians
legendary
was
shit.
Asked, I see, yeah. Bruce Arians was asked if Tampa Bay would be in the running for OBJ, and he goes, no, we don't need OBJ. We already have AB. That's too many letters. I thought that's a great answer. It's a great way to address it. Yeah, pretty much. But
one diva.
Odell Beckham
I don't
Jr.
need
announced today. Yeah. Oh, God, could you imagine that? Yeah, OBJ announced today he's going to sign with the LA Rams. I saw it, immediately sent the tweet to you guys saying, and I stand behind this, the Rams just lost a chance at the Super Bowl. This Rams team looked like a very good favorite to be, if not the Super Bowl champion, one of the two teams in the Super Bowl. They are firing on all cylinders. They had off weeks, but even in their off weeks, they still look fairly competitive. They'll have Von Miller on the field here any day now. And to me, when I look at that offense, Russ, we were talking about this before the show. I don't see OBJ fitting in. Like everybody seems to think OBJ is going to fit in. Yes. Do you have a great 1-2 punch now in him and Cooper Kupp? Yes. They had that in Cleveland with him and Jarvis Landry, and it didn't work. The only upside to this team over the Browns is the Rams don't have as much of a run game. They are more of a little bit of a pass offense, so there's going to be a little more spreading of the ball. But Stafford's got 9 weeks already. With Cooper Kupp, he's got that down. It's going to take him a little while to trust OBJ, not to say that he shouldn't, but I just think that there's too much personality in OBJ to, if he's not the one getting the ball 75% of the time, it's not going to work, and you can't win that way. It's been proven.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's remember when he went to Cleveland, it was a similar thing with Jarvis Landry, like you said, and it was okay at first. He was okay being the deep shot guy, the touchdown guy, and not the, you know, 15 catches a game guy. And maybe because, hey, again, this is he went to Cleveland. Oh, no, he didn't. He was traded. Never mind.
He was traded. I think he gave them a list of places he had a little bit of a say.
But here he picked his destination, so maybe he gets a little more of a cushion before OBJs. you could say that 10 times fast. But yeah, he's not going to be the every down guy. Cooper Kupp is a better version of what Jarvis Landry was when this experiment started. So OBJ is not going to overtake him either. And if he can truly be okay with being number two at best in that offense, then there's a real opportunity for this to work in a couple weeks when he gets up to speed. Granted, it's a 1-year deal. So all you really need is the rest of this year in the playoffs for him until he explodes anyways. So, hey, run out the clock. See if you can pull it off. It's a ticking time bomb, but maybe you've got enough runway to get through the season before it becomes an issue.
I mean, he's absolutely a rental car. I don't disagree with that. But I think the one thing you're forgetting about the difference between Cooper Kupp and Jarvis Landry is Odell Beckham's friend. They played
at
college
close
together.
Friends
he wanted to be there to be with his friend. Not that there's anything wrong with Cooper Kupp. I'm not trying to say that Cooper Kupp's a rival to OBJ, but part of the reason it worked so well in the beginning was he was genuinely happy for his friend. I just, like, I'm hoping he'll be genuinely happy for his teammate, Jay, but Cooper Kupp, we talked about a couple weeks ago, is Cooper Kupp a top 10 receiver in this league? And I think we all agreed, yes.
Yeah.
OBJ has the talent to be, but it just seems like since that miraculous catch for the Giants, OBJ has always had the talent to be, but he's never really been a top 10 receiver in this league. There always has been a good reason for him not to be in that list.
I mean, you could argue that Baker struggled a little bit when OBJ showed up. So I honestly, bottom lining it, I love it. Like I don't even view him as like the second receiver. It goes Kupp, it goes Woods, and then OBJ, and then Van Jefferson comes down a spot. And Jefferson was pulling down 6-7 balls a game already. So I honestly, I think this is going to be a opportunity for him to just don't pee on anything when you celebrate. Don't lift your leg up like a dog. Don't do anything dumb or Aaron Donald will come kick your ass. Shut up and win football games. And like, I mean that in the nicest way possible because like he tends to get himself in trouble a lot. And I think him coming to this team, like I watched him rehab his leg on Instagram for more time than I think any NFL fan should. Okay. He would hire people to videotape him or record him. I don't videotape anymore. You would record himself working out in the gym and rehabbing and doing all these things. And then all this editing packaging would go on it and he'd shove it on Instagram every day when he broke. I think he busted his Achilles or something. Mm-hmm. So he's a little bit of damaged goods, a lot of isolation, comes back wide open. Baker doesn't play nice with him and he dips out. His dad does a video. He wins a Super Bowl at the Rams. I also am on my fantasy team, but I've got this vision that he's going to be touchdown Jesus for like the next 5 weeks, and he's going to bring one in every game. Oh, Russ is quitting on us.
Russ is honest.
I had to turn off my light and shake my head at you.
Honest question though, Jay, you said you could make a case that Baker struggled when OBJ got there. And for whatever that is, I see what you mean. He's had some injury problems, but couldn't you make the argument that Odell literally just left this situation and went to the exact same problem? You have a team that has way too many options and a guy who only wants to be the only option. You look at Baker. He had Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, Njoku. He had Austin Hooper. Now you look at – you go to the Rams where, like you said, it's Woods, Kupp. Now him, you have Sony Michel and Russ, you gave me the Henderson in the backfield. There are so, and then I'm blanking on the name of their tight end. It's Tyler Higbee, isn't it?
Higbee. Yeah. It used to be.
I'm pretty sure it's Tyler Higbee, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, he went from an option or a situation where there were too many options and he wasn't enough of one to a team where there's just as many options and you could make an argue they are better options. Nick Chubb might be the only not better option to when you match it up against the Rams. The Rams obviously have the better receiving core. You can make an argument if Higbee's better than Njoku, but overall, OBJ just left a team that had and went to the exact same problem. It's just a team that has the exact same problem with a better record.
Yeah,
so I don't understand how everything we just had happen over the last 8 weeks doesn't transpire in another 8 weeks.
I think that you've got the history down right that it could repeat itself. I'd like to think because his dad sent the video instead of him, he's had a slice of humble pie. He could have sent that video all by his own self. He said, "Oh, hey, Dad, hey, Pops, do this. Press send. I'll even make the account for you. Press send." I think in my messed up brain, he's just going to be a little bit more adult about it. And he's going to make Stafford's going to throw. Why is our quarterback playing for the Rams? That's unbelievable. I hate it. I love it, but I hate
Rusty,
it.
Rusty, how do you feel about all this?
I mean, it's a similar situation in mouths to feed, but, I'm a Midwest guy, so I don't even want to make this point, but I feel like I have to. Because it's Odell, and we just talked about how he was Instagramming his rehab. Playing in L.A. hits different. Playing in a big city like that hits different. And maybe that's more of what he was looking for. Maybe he was sick of, like, going, oh, I can get a Michelin sponsorship, or I can go live in L.A. and be a movie star, right? Like, it's a consideration for some people, and he strikes me as the kind of person that would be a strong consideration for him, which, hey, he's going to make a lot of money outside of football for the rest of his career, maybe more than he makes in football. So I can't fault him for that if that's the path he's trying to take.
That's a solid point.
Before we move on to our final topic, I would like also to point out that two guys who we both passed on in that draft are now on the same team together.
Don't do that to us.
Aaron Donald.
Don't do that to us.
With Stafford.
So just to add that, with Stafford, a guy we didn't pass on.
And we take on don't we take on Ebron this weekend with the Steelers?
Is he still in Pittsburgh?
Isn't he with Pittsburgh now?
I don't know. I can't look it up.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
literally
still
in the dark.
Yeah,
that's right. Sorry, Russ, I apologize. Hey, Russ, do me a favor. Whip out your computer.
Yeah, sorry. I'm stuck in 1793.
I'm sorry. I won't do that again. Maybe.
No, he is still with the Steelers. Okay. Last topic before we get to our football teams is the fact that it's pretty much not even NFL or sports news at this point. It's almost, you could say, national news. It's reached every corner in some way or another. If you haven't heard about this, seriously, just go back under the rock that you live in, because this is it. Aaron Rodgers missed a game this past week after testing positive for COVID. Now, unpack this story as you will. Almost everyone, I think, when they heard, assumed Aaron Rodgers was vaccinated. He did an interview with Pat McAfee, because he does an interview every week with Pat McAfee. Shout out to Pat McAfee. If you ever want to come on this show, we'd love to have you. We all love you. But in that interview, he basically said, no, I'm not vaccinated. He almost kind of pulled the asshole version of Bertuzzi. I have my reasons why I'm not. Here are my reasons. My reasons are basically my way of saying I'm better than everyone else. Just leave me alone. And that didn't go well for him. He's lost sponsors. He's lost fans. There's been talks all throughout the NFL about should he be suspended? Should he be? I know he was fined. And what's hilarious is I saw this today. CeeDee Lamb, receiver for Dallas Cowboys, commented on the fact that CeeDee Lamb was given a larger fine for having his jersey untucked than Aaron Rodgers was for violating league policy. So take that for what it is. It's just disgusting. But guys, it's a pretty simple question. We don't need to unpack all this, because it's been done time and time again, and it's just not worth it anymore. Is this going to end up costing Aaron Rodgers more than it would have to just either, one, don't lie in the beginning and just say, no, I'm not vaccinated when you came back to the team, or two, just get vaccinated?
There's a concept. Yes, his intentional deceit is going to cost him dearly. We just mentioned OBJ making money outside of the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is very, very familiar with that and all of his sponsorships and big State Farm deals and whatnot. I don't think State Farm bring them back. Why would they? Right. You have Mark Hamill himself. Luke Skywalker is commenting on this, going, oh God, why did he have to admit he was being deceitful wearing a Star Wars sweater? Oh God, why my sweater? Right. Mark Hamill is calling you out for being a dick. You're going to lose real money outside of football, and you're not making it up on the field.
I'm not going to lie. He had a Doc Holliday shirt on, though, in his original interview from the movie Tombstone. I put that shirt on my Amazon list the very next day, just because I love Doc Holliday in the Tombstone movie, not because of Aaron Rodgers. I just didn't know that shirt existed, and I wanted it. So I have to give – Aaron Rodgers gets 1 point in my thing. Unfortunately, it takes a million points to count in this world.
I don't even know. Part of me wants to say – no, it doesn't affect him, because some asshole owner is going to pay him next year. Whether it's the Pack or not, he's still going to have a job. He's still going to be slinging the football. I feel like it's one of those things where it needed more staying power. Like, this is messed up. The Packers were complicit. The league is complicit. The fines don't make sense. He's losing sponsorships, which is great. But, like, someone is still going to say, hey, I want to win a Super Bowl, and you are a quarterback, and I'm going to pay you a shit ton of money to leave Green Bay and come here. You already have a bad relationship with them. I think he's an idiot. I feel like it's been such, what's the word? Like, passive punishment has been applied to him in so many different ways that he's just going to get his still. And like, it's wrong. Like, I love the product. I'm starting to hate the business as a fan because it doesn't make sense. So I don't know. I hope you guys are right and that he does suffer in other ways, because it's, can't just say I've been immunized when we're talking about something a little bit more specific.
Yeah. Sorry, I took horse medicine. I've been immunized. Yeah, okay, bud.
I was just about to say, literally, because I don't know if Russ is there or not, because I can't see Russ, I was going to ask this question to you, Jay. And Russ, yeah, Russ, apparently you're here, so you can be a part of this question as well. People who are just listening to the show and can't see it, Russ just keeps appearing and disappearing and then reappearing when the light happens to get on his face. But Jay, I'll go to you first, and then we'll let Russ chime in.
I'm trying to report my outage to DTE. Thank you.
You do what you got to do.
He's got this weird right, Jay, glasses glow going on right now, though. That's freaking me out a touch.
Jay, to you though, do you think there should be any more punishment or repercussion for Aaron Rodgers outside of what's already happened?
Yeah, I think if you can't touch Rodgers anymore, you touch Green Bay. You got to go after them. I mean, like, picks, money. I mean, I don't even know where the money goes to. Like, if you find someone, what do they even do with that money? Like, probably covering up the Washington football team scandal. They need more money for their attorneys. There has to be something more that happens to Green Bay. Like, how do you just tell the league, hey guys, you fucked up for a long time, that's okay? No, this is a pandemic. You can't be aggressive in June of last year and passive in November of now. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. That's why the business side is such a turnoff.
Shadow Man.
So there is a commissioner's exempt list. Put Rodgers on it and don't let him play anymore this season. This is ridiculous.
This is a
global health thing. It is one. Look, we have protocols for unvaccinated players. I disagree with the players being unvaccinated, but again, I can't force them to do it. Nobody can force them to do it. What Rodgers did is worse. He was intentionally deceitful and tried to get out of that and put people at risk because he tried to get around the rules because he thought they didn't apply to him. Let's put some other rules and apply it to him.
I like that.
I'm sick of this hot holier than thou bullshit where he thinks he's better than everybody.
I like that. What they're probably going to do too is Goodell is going to sit on that card until everyone finds out who was responding to what's his name? Raiders head coach.
Former head coach?
Gruden.
Former, yes.
Yeah, Gruden.
Yeah, him. Former head coach. Yeah, when all those emails finally get leaked to the public, Aaron Rodgers has been put on the exempt list because they're going to bury all that other shit. He's going to sit on that. I don't trust them anymore, man. I'm sorry.
Which, by the way, side note to that, Gruden is trying to sue the league for releasing his emails. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sure that'll be headline news here in a little bit. All right, moving on to our actual football teams. Lions coming off a bye week, 0-8, taking on the 5-3 Pittsburgh Steelers. And this actually works out great because since Russ doesn't have power, it means he can't actually look up the stats and beat me in answering this. So I'm going to ask you guys this question, and then we'll start talking it down. But of the two, between Cade McNamara and Jared Goff, who do you think has more passing yards this season?
Oh, my God, Cade McNamara. I got to go Cade.
I'll go Goff because he's just had to throw more.
Okay. The answer is actually Jared Goff, but surprisingly, it's only by 300 yards. Jared Goff has 1,995 yards this season. Cade McNamara has 1,666 yards.
Gross.
Cade McNamara has completed 130 passes on 208 attempts. Jared Goff has completed 206 passes on 308 attempts. So he's literally thrown the ball 100 times more than Cade McNamara and only has him by 300 yards. So it's awesome. Or by 300 yards. So it's great. It's fantastic. Like I said, it's the 0-8 Lions taking on the 5-3 Steelers and Big Ben, who actually might be as old as the clock he's nicknamed after at this point, because he is becoming an honest relic in this NFL. Pittsburgh is a 73.5% favorite. The over under on this puppy is 42.5. Steelers are giving up 8. Guys, I'm going to ask the question that the, and yes, I know I spelt it wrong. It was trying to be a play on words. Let's just have fun with it.
I see what you did there.
Steal one from Pittsburgh, Jay.
I mean, are we doing like a whole like material quote? I don't want you to meddle with me right now because that's not happening. God. Does that play?
Oh my God. Absolutely.
I'm so glad that my power's out so I don't have to look at this.
No, they can't. The Steelers have won 4 games in a row. Their defense has only gotten healthier since winning all 4 games in a row. That defense is averaging 2.5 sacks per game and at least a fumble recovery or an interception per game. One of the two happens in a game. Look, I'm going to break my trend here. We've got Adam Fox.
Yeah.
And we've got Jamal Williams. Those are the only two things I can tell you that are good on this team. I don't, even if Big Ben falls apart and the backup quarterback, don't even know, probably the guy that threw a helmet at another guy comes in, right? I don't even know what we would do to try to beat them. Honestly speaking, I this team is destined for failure. So I'm going to take the Lions to lose 9-24 to Big Ben and that defense. That defense is too good. Too good.
You want to know something that's kind of hilarious and will add to a reason that if they were going to steal it, this might be the only reason. Ben Roethlisberger has 10 less passing yards than Jared Goff does this year.
Yeah.
So, hot 10 garbage. Touchdowns and 4 interceptions to Goff's 8-6. So neither of these offenses are doing it. But Rusty, over to you. Can the Lions steal one from Pittsburgh?
Can they? Well, let's look at this. Lions coming off a bye. Pittsburgh coming off a Monday night short rest. So that's in their advantage. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger, as mentioned, garbage right now. This is a Steelers team ripe for an upset. Unfortunately, this Lions team is the Pits.
Yes,
now we've all done it. Now we can hopefully move on. No, they're not going to pull it off. Again, I'm not going to pick them to win a single game until they already win a game. I'll say 21-17. I think it's close. I think eight points is probably too much because of the extracurriculars I just mentioned. But Pittsburgh's the better team, and they'll pull it off at home.
Can I ask you both one question?
Look, yeah, absolutely.
What do you think the Lions' record is coming off the bye?
Going back how far? Like what?
Ever. Since the bye, I don't even know when the bye started. Since the bye has started, what do you think the record is coming off the bye?
35% win percentage.
I swear to God, my answer was going to be it's 0-8, Jay. They're coming off the bye as an 0-8 football team. I didn't understand how you were wording that question. I would say I don't know how long the bye went, so you can multiply this by whatever it
is. Hang on. I'll tell you. Hang on. 37 years.
They have a – okay. So 10-27.
Russ, what do you think?
I'll say they have a 1-2 ratio.
I'll go
– almost a 1-2
ratio. What is that, 15-22?
18-19 coming off the bye, which is shocking.
So almost
50-50.
Wow. Okay.
Huh. So I thought –
look, the Lions' optimist in me, the one that – yeah, the one that loves this football team and wants to see them be successful, especially with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, wants to say yes. The fact that the Steelers are coming off short rest, the fact that Big Ben is literally just a clock at this point. He's just a tall standing statue that doesn't do much of anything. And the fact that the Lions are coming off a bye, I want to believe the Lions can do it. I really do. We've all said it throughout the season. This team has shown flashes of the final picture. You see, okay, maybe that's what they're going for, because we get these flashes of a great defensive half or an offense that clicks on all cylinders against a Rams team it never should have clicked with. So we see these flashes, but that being said, that bye week doesn't sell me on, maybe they got it figured out in the 2 weeks since they just got slaughtered by the Eagles. So No, I don't think they can pull off an upset. I think we're going to get the exact same thing we got before the bye. We're going to get a football team that's either going to be in it till the last second and then show that there's still a young football team trying to figure it out and lose on a last second upset, or we're going to get what we got a couple weeks ago. We're going to get a Steelers team that Big Ben's going to put up 350 yards and four touchdowns on us when he never should have. So I love this Lions team. I'm here for this team. I want to see them make strides and get better. It's not this year. It's probably not next year, but I think it's coming eventually. So I'm with you guys. Like I said, the over under is 42.5. So give me, I'll take the over. Give me 30 to 14 Pittsburgh. Give me 30 to 14 Pittsburgh. That eight isn't enough to keep up. These are two really bad quarterbacks, really bad offenses. It's going to be whichever defense plays better. And at this point, I think it's the Steelers defense, just for the fact of that they actually have players that have played in this NFL long enough to prove they're good. So we'll see what comes of it.
I'm buying that. I'm buying that all day.
Yeah. We're going to hold off the punishment on you, Jay, for just a little bit longer, and we'll talk about them football. It's okay. You breathe through the pain. If it hurts, that's okay. You're
going to
be all right.
Fine.
Russ understands those Lamaze breathing. He's got a little practice right now.
Hey, yeah, Burton classes start this weekend. Real excited for it, honestly.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. U of M, 29-7 win over Indiana this past week. Getting over to State if it ever comes. Cade McNamara, 10 of 18, 168 and two touchdowns. The proof that J.J. McCarthy needs to just sit down for a little while because he just did not look good at all in this game. Title says that Hassan Haskins steps up for U of M. Obviously, Corum went down very early in this game. Only had one carry for 4 yards. Hassan Haskins, 27 carries for 168 yards. Johnson, 5 receptions, 108 yards. Russ, I want to break down this game with both of you, but before we do, I want to ask you the question. When you saw Corum, you know, leaving the field, likely not to return, and you knew it was Hassan Haskins and probably a lot of Hassan Haskins, how confident were you? But at the same time, was it a little bit of that thing of, oh, no, we've had a really good 1-2 punch going. Can we do it with just one arm?
I was confident for that week, right? Like, it wasn't, oh, no, we might lose. It was, oh, no, what happens the rest of the season? Because if he's out for any extended period of time, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've seen this Michigan team needs that 1-2 punch to be successful. Look, I'm a fool, so I'm holding out hope that there's some good news coming in that Ohio State game. Corum being gone takes that away entirely. So,
yeah,
hopefully a quick recovery.
To show how much of a 1-2 punch it really is, now you have to factor in that Hassan Haskins, like I said, got, you know, 20-plus carries and 168 yards in this game. But Hassan Haskins, at this point in the season, 165 attempts, for 829 yards, averaging 5 yards a carry. Blake Corum, 130 carries, 778 yards, averaging 6 yards a carry. Both have a long, Haskins' longest is 62, DeCorum 67. So it legitimately is a 1-2 punch. They are right next to each other in all regards. You have to figure if they had both played in that game, it probably would have been a little more balanced out. They probably each go for their average of, what, 95 to 100 yards apiece, and they're probably neck and neck on these steps. This really is a 1-2 punch. What are you giggling at?
He's got a flashlight now. This man is keeping me entertained. Sorry.
He doesn't have power, yeah. Jay.
My work phone that I was using for a light died, so I have my nice crank light that I'm now using.
I love this.
Hi guys,
we're just gonna get Russ in the dark. That's what we're gonna get. Yeah. Jay, when you look at this game, this was one of those games where I don't think anybody really had a real fear going into it. The only real potential was just that Michigan doesn't rebound from the previous week against you guys. But on all fronts, Michigan got it done. I mean, we talk about it, and on the other side, if my phone would load. I'm having phone trouble too over here. McCauley, 10 of 24 for 88 yards. Rushing game, McCauley was their leader with 14 carries for 37 yards. Hendershot with 3 receptions for 34 yards. So they never let this Indiana team get off the, you know, get off the ground and get going. Other than first drive, they, you know, Indiana scored. After that, they stalled out and never did anything again. On the other side, the offense gets firing. So when you look at this, this was kind of that perfect epitome of a revenge game. We just weren't getting revenge on the team we wanted to get revenge on.
Yeah, I mean, they got stuffed like a turkey. Anytime you get held to 88 yards, was it 88 in the air and 107 on the ground, like collectively under 200 total offensive yards, like, yeah, you're only going to score 7 points. So I don't think it really mattered what was happening on the offensive side. It sucks that you guys are down to one running back now. I don't think that's going to bode well for Penn State, but when your defense shows up like that and you limit a team like that, regardless of the talent on the other side of the field, you hold anyone to 7 points, you're winning that game, or at least you ought to. So I don't know if I'd say revenge. I would say that your defense showed up and you stopped the entire football team from doing anything under 200 yards. So if you're going to do that, you're going to win. So yes, you got a W. I'm going to say it that way. I don't think it was revenge.
It's completely fair. I see it as more of they did the things in that game I think they would have liked to have been able to do against State. They backed off the pass a little bit, not a ton, which I'm happy to see. What's that?
I said, oh, win?
No, yeah, that. No, I just mean the more they had a more balanced attack.
Right.
You saw a run game that we didn't really have against State balanced in with a passing attack. There really was – it was that kind of perfect mixture of you didn't know what they were going to do. It was literally a 50-50 guess, which is how it should be for Michigan. And over the last, you know, couple months, it has not been a 50-50 guess. It's been more 80 run, 20 pass. This is a lot more balanced out, which I like to see heading into a stretch of football where we have a chance to come out of it with a, you know, a real good shot. So yeah, go ahead, Jay.
But would you consider Jake Moody kicking 3 field goals? Like, that should not be a solution going down the rest of the schedule. You're not going to be able to do field goals against Ohio State and Penn State. Those have to be touchdowns.
It's been the solution the whole season, apparently, so.
That's the one knock I have on your game over the weekend. It's too moody. It's too much sass. Too much mood.
That's fair. I understand. Moving on, we do have the matchup this week, Michigan against Penn State, at Penn State. Michigan is a 53% favorite. The spread's only 1.5, so they expect this puppy to be very close. No surprise there. Penn State is a 6-3 football team, so they're very competitive. Over-under is 48.5. Jay, when you look at this matchup, Michigan, you know, has to leave the big house. They aren't, you know, usually the greatest team when they're not in the, you know, when they're away from home. How do you see this one shaking out?
I think the spread says everything you need to see there. And because you can build a narrative either direction. U of M's on the road with one back going to Happy Valley. Penn State is not that great on run defense. They're just average in the Big Ten. They excel through the air. You guys are pretty decent on the air. I think, what is it? You're second to Wisconsin on yards allowed on passing defense. That's pretty damn good, because that's what Wisconsin's known for, is for their D. So I don't know. The spread says everything. I'm going to take Michigan to win 21-20. And I think a lot of people are going to lose some money on that spread there. But I say you guys get it done. I think you're going to excel with one running back, even though people will probably write you off for it. Close victory, 21-20.
21-20, I like it. By the way, I'd like to point out that Russ's light makes it look like he's a part of an FBI raid where they're about to come take his computer from him, because the light just keeps flashing on and off like they're
about
to find him.
They'll hear you and find me.
21-20, so Jay like expects those points to be right next to each other. That's a fair assessment. Russ, over to you. How do our Maize and Blue do against the Nittany Lions?
I'm actually of a similar mindset here. I think it's going to be a slower pace of a game as far as the scoring goes. This is a Penn State team that, yeah, they're 6-3, but 9-point loss to Ohio State, 3-point loss to Iowa. These are a couple of top five teams that they have played tight through the rest of the game. Here, we'll just spotlight my mouth so it's not staring in right in my eyes. So, just a disembodied mouth floating around. I have a 24-21 3-point victory for the Wolverines here. Expecting it'll only be Haskins right now. Would welcome good news, but we've seen he'll be successful. I think either one of them would have been successful on their own. My question has always been longevity with it when you only have one running back carrying as much as this team likes to run. But it'll get them through a week. We'll move on, inexplicably be ranked higher than Michigan State for another week.
Oh, don't fucking, no.
Oh, it's dumb. Okay. It's dumb. No, I'm with you. It's dumb that Michigan is ranked higher.
Wait, no. We're gonna get to it. We're gonna get to it. Relax.
You're gonna piss me off.
I'm gonna piss you off by taking your side.
I was gonna say, what drug cartel are you rolling on to the local news right now? That's really what I need to know. no,
we can't tell you.
We're gonna get to it, Jay. Don't worry. Yeah, there's plenty to talk about. I'll be quick with this. I think this is the one game where if Harbaugh was going to go back to what worked best, this would be the game, because this is a Nittany Lion team that's just good enough to make problems for an 8-1 Michigan team, just good enough to throw off the balance. So if ever they were going to go back to let's hold on to the ball as long as we can, let's have 8-9 minute drives that just chip away, keep the ball out of Penn State's hands so our defense can be nice and rested, and when they do have to go out on that field, you know, they're not gassed, this would be it. So I think that 48.5 is asking a ton. I really do. I see this as a 17-14 game. This is going to be Hassan Haskins, and, you know, if Cade has 20 passes in this game, I would be astonished. This is going to be one of those early season Cade throws the ball and goes 11 of 15 for 130 yards and a touchdown. Hassan Haskins grinds it out with 20-25 carries for 160 yards. Low scoring. We just got to get in the end zone a couple times and let that defensive line handle Penn State. So I see it as 17-14. If you're not a fan of smash mouth, run the ball football, put something else on, because that's what you're going to probably see this week from Michigan. It's got them to 8-1. I don't think that Harbaugh is going to risk mixing with that at this point in the season. If he was, he would have done it when we were playing, you know, the smaller teams to try to tweak. He's figured out what he wants to do to get wins. This is how he's going to get wins. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to, you know, help us in the standings of, you know, ESPN highlights, but it's going to get us wins and it's going to make a chance against Ohio State viable. So we'll see what comes out of it. Jay looks so happy right now.
No, we don't even need to do it. Like, we can just roll right on through.
Oh, we don't. I 100% agree with you. We don't need to do it, but we're going to do it. Yeah, we're going to do it. The
Speaking
8-1
scary stories.
Yeah, the 8-1 Michigan State Spartans. 8-1, you ask. Yes, 8-1, because they did sustain a loss. It happened. Fall 40-29 to the Purdue Boilermakers. And look, this was exactly what I said it could have been, Jay. It could have been a game that State overlooked. They coming off this big win against Michigan. They did everything they wanted to do. They got the W, and then it's like you don't turn the switch and lock into the next week. Now, look, Purdue had a game. They had a game. There's no way around it. O'Connell goes 40 of 50. And now, look, he had to throw the ball 54 times. So that should tell you exactly what kind of offense this team ran. 40 of 54, 536 yards and 3 touchdowns. Bell goes with 11 receptions for 217 yards. They had 58 yards rushing as a team. They did not run the ball effectively at all. On the other side, if this ever loads, Thorne, 20 of 30, 276, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's a winning formula. There's nothing wrong with that performance. Walker, 22 carries, 136 yards and a touchdown. Reed had 4 catches for 73 yards. What happened to Naylor, Jay? Why is there no Naylor?
He broke his hand.
Right. I'm just messing with you.
Thank you. You're like, you know when you watch a movie and you've already seen it and you're like, hey, that was a dumb idea. I already know exactly what they're going to say when you're making me watch this again in my head. What happened to Naylor?
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm just giving
it.
You a hard time.
I hate it. I hate it.
Really but nailed Jay, him with that one.
Shut up. Oh, go back in the dark, sir.
Shit. Go back in the dark. Gosh. Jay, look, it's a new week. You're on from this. Spartans rebound. Can the Spartans rebound following an upset by the Boilermakers?
1,000% yes. Okay, first of all, I'm not going to complain about the officiating because Tuck told me I can't. Tuck came out and said, we're not talking about officiating, so I'm not going to talk about officiating. But I want to talk about officiating, but I'm not going to talk about officiating, okay? We're going to put Purdue aside, choo-choo your ass out of here. The Terps are going to come to East Lansing, and we're going to rip them out of their shell, stuff them in like Super Mario, and kick their little spinning turtle shell out of here. And I'm not worried about the Terps. So, yes, we can and we will rebound. It's not a matter if they can. It is going to happen. There's no 0% chance we lose this game this weekend.
Sir, Akupa is not a Terrapin. Thank you very much.
Akupa is my Terrapin this weekend, and we're going to chop his ass out of here. It's not happening. That was disgusting.
There is a Terrapin analogy.
By the way, Jay,
I hate you.
I don't mean to upset you, Jay, but there's actually an 11% chance you could lose this game. Because Michigan State is favored 88% to 11. So, but look, you should be happy. As we've established on this show, anything over 90 is just Djibouti. It's lying. It's made up. That 88 is a perfect number. It's perfect. 90 isn't a real thing. No one
Djibouti's
should ever
a
be
real
that
place.
Favorited in the game.
There's a college.
There isn't a college.
I believe you. They're going up the Maryland Terrapins. They are a 5-4 team led by younger brother of Tua. So you should be happy about this. A Tagovailoa is going to play in this game. You're going to get baby Tua in this game.
I feel like I'm getting spread. Consolation prizes right now, and we do not deserve that. We're still 8-1, damn it.
Yeah. Spread is 13, over under is 61. Not expecting a ton of defense in this game. I'll get this out of the way quick. This is your Indiana game. This is your everything you wanted to do against the Boilermakers that you weren't able to do. We're going to see. This is going to be Walker's Heisman game where he puts up, 200 yards and 4 touchdowns and Thorne has a perfect day and they just get out and get going. This is a 5-4 team. So they have a winning record, but it's barely a winning record. And again, when you compare the two, it's not the same. Michigan State's talent this year is on such a different level from Maryland that I expect this to not even be close at the end of the first half. This is going to be one of those games where Tucker's going to have them so pissed going into this game that I would be afraid to be on that field against Michigan State. I see this as a 37-14 win for Michigan State. They're going to get out, get after it. If they're smart, we lost Rusty for a minute. We'll get him back as soon as he can. Jay, if they're smart, Walker doesn't play the fourth quarter because he doesn't need to play the fourth quarter. That's where they need to be at this point going into this game.
Yeah, no, you've got that dead to rights. That's what it's going to be. I mean, collectively, Iowa and Ohio State put up 118 points on Maryland. We are a step above Iowa. I think we're maybe just a notch behind Ohio State. Look, and if Walker doesn't pay the fourth, that's fine, but he's going to have a Heisman day. You've got that right out of my notes, too. Typically speaking, when I give a team more than 30 points, I'm speaking from my heart instead of my head, and you guys have to bring me back and hold me back in because I'm just going to just be obnoxious. I'm not going to do that this week because they're going to win 41-17. They're going to go beyond the 30. You don't need to hold me back because it's all gas, no brakes here. Because they have to be. Like, if they don't do all these things we're talking about, we're just giving this lousy-ass committee another way to turn us into this sideshow when it doesn't really matter. Their rankings don't mean shit, and everyone knows it. And they just use it as a way to build narratives that aren't true. So if we allow ourselves not to blow Maryland's doors off, they're just going to keep doing this sideshow thing until it really fucking matters in the end. And they actually put real people and real teams in real spots where they belong. So I want nothing of this false narrative that they're pushing. I want nothing to do with damn turtles, even though it's my favorite animal. I could care less about turtles. We're winning 17. We're winning 41-17. Like, mark my words, we're winning 41-17. And Kenneth Walker is going to have that ugly neon green state across his upper chest on television, and no one's going to like the jerseys, and we're going to win, and we're going to put the committee to go to bed. Committee, go to sleep. Don't do it again. You messed up.
All right, Rusty, I know you're back, even though we can't see you.
Your prediction for
this Michigan State matchup. There you go. Your prediction for this Michigan State matchup.
I mean, it'll be a bloodbath. It'll be an absolute bloodbath. You're ruining college jerseys, and you're killing the turtles. To which I say, the hell with the turtles.
Yes. 42-10,
bloodbath, Michigan State.
Let's go.
You're not going to silence the committee, though. Good luck with that.
The committee.
Absolutely. But they'll exist forever.
I said we were going to get to it.
I'm sorry.
I said we were going to get to it. Now, if you've listened to this show over the last couple of weeks, you would assume the obvious choice for me would be to goat the hell out of Justin. But I'm not going to do that. I'm actually not going to do that because it's true. College football rankings don't use Russ math. They don't use Russ math at all. Because now, look, I'm going to present the only logical argument as to why Michigan is ranked higher than Michigan State. This is the only logical argument, okay?
Boobs.
Michigan
because
boobs. Has one loss. Let me. Michigan has one loss. Michigan State has one loss. Michigan didn't lose to an unranked football team. State lost to an unranked Purdue football team. You cannot stay in the rankings higher than teams that have not lost to unranked teams. Oregon should not be in this at this point. Oregon has a loss, and it's to a team like that. There is no feasible reason that Oregon should be ahead of Ohio State in these rankings. State lost to Purdue. Michigan lost to State. I get that. But we didn't lose to an unranked team. We lost to a team that was literally one rank below us when we lost. Mm. That's the only argument I could present to you, Jay, as to why Michigan State should not be ranked higher than Michigan. The only
but
one.
Then,
you guys
but then,
are a okay. great football team. You have a guy that is going to win the Heisman in a walk, in my opinion. You're a team that
in a walker.
In all honesty, there you go. You're a team that, in all honesty, if you can win out, has to be in the argument for the college football playoff, even with that Purdue loss. Look, I'm a Michigan fan. Russ is a Michigan fan. I don't think it'll go too far to say that Russ will agree with me on this. That Michigan State is one of the best teams. Not only in the Big Ten, but in college football right now. They are a really solid football team. They had a one-off. Purdue took its shot, and it worked out for them. It happens every year to a team. But in all honesty, that's your only argument as to why we're ranked higher than you, is that we didn't lose to an unranked team. You did.
I've got so many thoughts in my brain. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but then don't put Oregon ahead of Ohio State. Like, you have to be consistent in what you're doing. Like, don't tell me you're a Jay Alexander's and I walk in the damn door and it's a Bob Evans. Cause that's what the committee's doing. They're playing games here and it's bullshit. Oregon is ahead of Ohio State for a reason. We should be ahead of you guys for a reason. But no, the committee wants to be cute. Because it doesn't matter, and then they're going to play these fun games until it matters at the end. Oh, we're just playing. This is where everyone really should have been for 8 weeks in a row, but it makes for bad television. America is dumb.
Let me ask you an honest question.
I'm so
honest
sick of
question.
It.
I'm asking you to take the Spartan jersey off for a minute. You have to be unbiased and give me an honest opinion. If the tables had turned and Michigan had won that matchup between the two teams, and then we had fallen to Indiana the next week, would it still be logical that we're ranked higher than you?
If you beat us and you fall to Maryland. Yeah, because you beat
everything
us.
That's happened.
If we were undefeated,
if everything that's happened, I'm saying, if everything that's happened in the last 2 weeks happened, but in reverse, if we had beat State and then fallen to Indiana and you guys had beaten Purdue, would it still make sense that we're ranked higher than you?
Should yes,
you be ranked higher than us?
If you beat, if Michigan beats Michigan State, I don't care what happens in the following. I don't care what happens in the following week. You are above us.
Like for the rest of the season, where does that stop?
Penn State, Ohio State, when this gambit starts, I think the head to head matters because you have the committee looking at, they've been great for so long and Nick Saban's been great for so long and Clemson does this and Georgia's defense. They allow that history to come in. But then when do we just start looking at what actually happened on TV? Like what's actually being, because the spark of Michigan State shouldn't even happen this year. And it's happening. And we beat your ass and we're behind your ass. I don't want to look at your butt.
Yeah. Hold on. You can't say past narrative informs rankings and that's invalid. And then say current narrative of Michigan State overachieving informs narrative and helps.
I'm not. The committee is. I'm trying to describe what I think the committee does when they look at things, and I think it's all wrong. I'm not doing that. I want the committee to do better. We should be above.
Here's the thing. Here's the one thing I'm going to say that this conversation, in my opinion, shouldn't be happening because you guys were kind of given a gift here. You were given a very nice gift. You lost to an unranked team and somehow stayed in the top 10. If any other team on that list, like, say, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Cincy, did that and lost to an unranked team, they wouldn't be in the top 10 anymore. They would drop them like a bad habit. You guys are in this because you still hold the ability to make the Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State narrative of they all have to play each other worthwhile. It creates that hype video almost. If Michigan had lost to Purdue the following week, we wouldn't even have been in the top 10 anymore. They would have dropped us. But you guys lost to
two losses. You better
you held on to your ranking. I meant like if everything were flipped, like if we had beat State and then lost to Indiana, I don't think we hold on to a top 10 spot like that.
I don't see. I don't want any
because
favors.
The narrative
like,
is still there. I just don't think you guys would have. I, in all honesty, when you lost the game, I looked at Aaron and said they're going to fall out of the top 10. I was surprised when you didn't, but you didn't. So it is what it is. And I think because you beat us and because we held the ranking like we did, that's what's holding you guys in there. If Michigan hadn't been ranked, it wouldn't have meant anything. And vice versa. If the game had gone the other way. Go ahead, Russ.
Oh, here's the thing that drives me absolutely bonkers about this. The rankings won't matter for another month. And yet we will argue about
absolutely.
Them. And they're not. My life became more peaceful when I accepted the fact that these are not rankings, the power rankings. Sour rankings, if you will. Because of all the sourness that comes from them. And it's narrative based and it's touch and go and this and that. And the ultimate fact of it is it doesn't matter. If some team 6 or 8 or 3 right now, if you don't beat Ohio State, you might as well already be out of the top 10. You're not going to do anything with it. And the rankings don't actually matter at the end. It's like at the 3-quarter mark in basketball going, hey, the Pistons are in 7th place. Well, that's horseshit. They should be in 5th place. That's where I think they should be. Well, they don't decide the playoffs until the end. We got time. We'll get there. I don't know. It's hard for me to get too worked up about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, the other reason that these rankings don't mean anything right now and clearly shouldn't mean anything to anyone is because if these rankings were real of who the best teams are, I hate to break it to you, Alabama, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma would be the top 3, and you wouldn't be able to dispute it. None of them have lost a game. I'm sorry, Georgia. I apologize. I was looking at Alabama when I said that. Georgia, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma would be the top 3, however you want to put them, but they would be the top 3, and it wouldn't even be a debate. None of them have lost a game, But somehow a one-loss Oregon, a one-loss Ohio State get ahead of Cincy, and a one-loss Michigan and a one-loss Michigan State get ahead of Oklahoma. In reality, Oklahoma is the team that should be pissed right now. They haven't lost a single game. Have they had some nail-biters? Yes, but every team in this top 10 has had a nail-biter at one point or another. So I agree with Russ on that. These rankings don't mean anything for another month. They're just a way for this to happen, for us to all sit here and debate how the hell does that team get ahead of that team.
Did they have nail-biters, or did they have – some teeth rattlers?
Oh my god,
some rattlers.
No Spencer rattlers here.
Yeah.
I got you. I know dumb jokes when I hear them. I got you. Can I do one thing though? Can I provide a service for everyone?
Can you provide power?
Absolutely.
I'm not that good. Hang on. Ready? Watch this. If I clap my hands and your power turns back on, sweet Jesus. I'm not that good. Sure. What I am good at, though, make the playoff 8 teams. And you move that bar just a little bit lower from 4 to 8 and allow 8 teams. People will be happy to be 5, 6, 7, 8. You can pontificate until you're blue in the face about where you think everyone's going to be. As long as you're in, you're in. That's all I would care about. I would say, fuck your sour rankings. I'm in the top 8. I'm in it, damn it. Russ is going to a rave. I have an excellent idea of how to fix life, and Russ is going to a rave.
I was charging my battery, thank you. It's a crank.
It's a rave. Make it 8.
Oh, Justin.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I have a feeling after this week it's not going to – you're wrong. I don't know what – what do you want me to tell you? You're wrong.
What are you wrong about?
I don't have logic to back up why you're wrong. You asked me to tell you you were wrong. You're wrong. I don't know why you're wrong, but you're wrong. Look, it's an imperfect system, and it's the reason every year we hear, oh, they're going to have to make it 8 teams, and oh, they're going to have to, you know, here's an idea. It's a strange idea, and it would take some working out, but it no more working out than what it takes to fix the football playoffs. Just create a super conference. Every year, throw Alabama, throw Georgia, throw Clemson, throw Oregon, throw Michigan State, throw Ohio State, throw all those top 10 teams that you think are in that super conference and say, here's your schedule. You got to play all these teams. And you know how we figure out who the best are? The best 2 teams at the end of the season play each other for the natty. There you go. It takes away the ability for the Cinderella story, because a small team like Cincy can't, or like, you know, or like years ago when they said Boise State should have been in it. It takes the ability for those teams to go out and have 12-0 seasons and to get in. But at the end of the day, if you think those are the best teams, just let them play each other every year. We don't need to watch Michigan and Michigan State clobber Rutgers and Maryland every year. Let's watch them play the real teams. Let them be every week games that actually matter.
I back that decision.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Rutgers and Maryland play each other every year, and 17 people are in the stands.
Absolutely,
yeah. It's a problem.
It is what it is. That's a great crowd. That's a great crowd for a team that plays in a high school football field. Oh. All right, moving on. We want to talk Red Wings and we want to talk Pistons. Last night, we got whatever I think everybody's been waiting for since the season started, and that is the showdown of the 1 and the 2. Cade Cunningham takes on Jalen Green in the against the Houston Rockets. Pistons got a 112-104 win over the Rockets. To give you a couple numbers here, I mean, look, everybody wants to say Cade is the best player on our team, but right now I don't think you can argue the fact that it's Jeremy Grant. This guy is playing basketball at a top level. 35 minutes, 12 of 13 shooting, 35 points, had a great 7 of 9 from the charity stripe, played great. Sadiq Bey was 16 points. Sadiq Bey's shooting is starting to get a little worrisome to me. 6 of 17 shooting. It is what it is. He had 9 rebounds, though, so he contributed there. Obviously, Cade Cunningham, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Kelly Olynyk with 13 off the bench. And the guy that I love watching, and again, he's starting to fill that Ben Wallace role very nicely, is what Stewart does. This guy just seems to be in the play every play in some way, whether it's setting a pick, getting a rebound. He had a great putback last night. So he's not doing anything box worthy that you're like, oh my gosh, look what happened there. 4 points, 8 rebounds, Jay. On the other side, this is a Houston team that they have on paper, they got some great talent. I mean, you look at Wood, 7 of 14, 50% shooting, 20 points, 9 rebounds. Green was – this is where it got a little scary, though. Green, 8 of 20 shooting, 23 points. So this guy was not afraid to jack the ball up when he got it. And, you know, late – he got really cold late. But I want to ask you, Jay, when it comes to this – I texted this question to you guys last night during it because it was a super close game and Cunningham and Green were almost neck and neck. Like I said, they finished 3 points apart, in the box score. When you look at that game, because the record right now really doesn't mean anything because these are not good basketball teams, but at the end of the day, does a solid performance by Cade and a win outweigh if Green goes off for 10 more points and they get the loss?
I don't know. I think because Cade didn't get the start like Green did, you could die on that hill a little bit if you wanted to. I also got to say, you know, Jalen Green trying to create drama by driving the lane and then turning backwards and yelling at Cade, like,
yeah,
I'm okay that scoring is down for Cade because maturity is up. Because like this isn't going to be like NBC trying to force Ovechkin versus Crosby, because that never even existed. Like, there's got to be some substance behind it. So if Cade's going to be down and Jalen Green's coming out hot at the start and he wants to be this flashy guy, that's fine. Like, I'm fine with being patient on Cade right now, because clearly something happened between missing camp, having a bad ankle, taking time to heal it, starting a game, coming back, jumping back in. He ain't at 100%. And he's also not going to start some fake drama between Green that doesn't actually exist yet. Like, Jalen Green can get mouthy all he wants. Do I hope that eventually there is some drama between the two of them and they have some legitimate gripe? Every fan. That's why you're a fan. You watch for that drama. But I'm okay that his scoring is down. If Green went off, that's fine. I don't think they're starting at equal levels yet. And when they get there, oh, God, do I hope there's drama? Because you know it's going to draw me in. I watched last night's game because of that.
Yeah, same. I think Cade, for those that didn't see the press conference afterwards, I think Cade handled it well. He even said, "I didn't take it personally. Heat of the moment." But I think what we're seeing when we watch this game, and now I'm giving two names just because they got drafted together, and I see the careers going similar. Please don't assume that I'm saying these are the only people they can be. But I think after watching last night, I think what we got out of this is we saw exactly that. I think Cade and Green end up being that whole LeBron-Carmelo thing. Jalen Green is always going to care about scoring, and I think he's going to have to score for Houston to be competitive, but I don't see him doing a lot else. He's going to be that guy that's going to go 8 of 20 some nights for 23 points, but he's also going to be the guy that's going to go 15 of 20 some nights for, you know, 40 points. Whereas Cade, I don't think Cade was never going to win the scoring title in the NBA, but Cade's going to be that guy that the box score is always going to be full. He's going to finish nights with 25 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, 4 steals, and that's why I say LeBron. I don't think he's ever going to be LeBron James, but he's going to be that guy that at the end of the night, you look at the box score and go, yeah, LeBron had 30 points. He had 10 rebounds and 9 assists. When did that happen? Like, he's just going to do everything. He's going to become that Swiss Army knife. And that's going to always be that thing. You're always going to have to look at him through that lens. Do I think he's ever going to outscore Jalen? Yes, there's going to be nights he's going to have more points than him. But Green's always going to be the scorer. Cade's going to be the complete guy. He's going to be the guy that fills it out and makes a more complete product out of everything.
I'm buying that. I think that's fair, because like if you still eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch, you are a humble ass dude, and that's what he does. He still crushes those. And if he's gonna be more of the well-rounded ball, like watching him pass the ball is almost more impressive than watching him shoot it right now. Like I could watch him pass a basketball all day long, and I think that's what it's perfect for what the Pistons even need. We don't need some hot flashy dude right now. We need a team builder.
What I like is that, yeah, he's come into this this, and that's the thing. As the number one overall pick, it could be very easy for him to step on that court and just go, no, I'm the number one guy. I'm going to do what I want to do. But he's not doing that. He knows his role is right now, until things change, his role is to get the ball in the hands of the scorer, which is Grant for right now. His role is to get the ball in the hands of Sadiq Bey if Sadiq Bey is open. His role is to score when he can, but we need him to be the facilitator until they're ready to make that shift where, and I think it's coming, where they take the ball out of his hand as the point guard, let Hayes, because Hayes isn't the scorer. Hayes is the defensive guy. You want to put Hayes on the other team's best scorer. And to do so, it's best to put the ball in his hand because he controls that everybody has to be in front of him. And then he can distribute, and he's the first guy back to defend. That's what you want. So I think once Hayes gets a little more comfortable with that role, I think you see them take the ball out of Cade's hand and get Cade in positions to score because he is a valuable scorer, but they're just not at that point yet. I think they want to give him a little more time to let the ankle get as healed up as they can. But as I was putting my notes together, I thought about something because we talked about him last week getting off to a very icy start, and I want to ask you, do you see this as the tale of two different weeks? It's that first week coming back. He looks a little iffy. You don't know if it's the ankle. He, you know, his shooting percentages were very bad. He was, I think at one point he was something like 8 of 30 from the three-point line. He was just not doing it. Now, don't get me wrong. His three-point percentage hasn't skyrocketed. He went 4 of 8 last night, 50%. Nothing wrong with that. But does it feel kind of like the tale of two weeks? Like that first week was very much learning the speed, and now he's like, all right, I've got the speed. Now I just got to, you know, figure out what technically works and what doesn't in these games.
No, I'd agree with that too. You know, trusting his ankle and being comfortable to do the things that's being required of him, that's also huge. It reminds me of Hockenson. We were on Hawk Watch because we wanted to see him be this thing and why we drafted him at 8. You know, his numbers are only going up. And yeah, did he have some pressure with Green? Maybe he internalized some of that and cranked it up a bit. Sure. I don't think he's taken any step backs. Like he hasn't gone backwards at all with joining this team and being on the roster. So I think it's just something that we have to patiently enjoy and take some nuggets here and there. But when he wants to start being like the man on this team, it's going to look great. It's going to look real great on him.
I think it's absolutely look great. Now, again, we're crystal balling this because it's you're looking at an 82 game season and we're only what 9 games into it, so we got a little ways to go here. But when you look at this, do you see this team, if Cade can keep making the progressions he's making, if they can find that role for Killian Hayes that works perfectly, if Grant and Sadiq Bey can understand the scoring is going to be on their shoulders for a little bit until they get everything ironed out. Stewart seems to understand his role as the defensive anchor that you're not coming. I mean, before I ask this question, I have to ask, how much did you love Isaiah Stewart just standing over Blake Griffin?
Oh, I saw that. Last week. He could have moved. He could have easily gotten out of the way. He's like, oh, I'm scoot right here right quick and just stand above you. No, I'm not moving. This is my hill. This is my hill. Get away. I love it. That's the drama, A, that draws fans. But it's also a representation that this team is not going to take shit. Like, you ain't just going to come in and roll over us. Like, we are going to fight.
Yeah. Little message from the Pistons, basically, via Isaiah Stewart, pretty much, which I have no problem with. But, again, getting back to my question. If I asked you to make a prediction one way or the other, which way would you go with? Lottery pick Pistons at the end of the year or barely in the playoff Pistons at the end of the year?
Well, knowing how, I mean, without Cade, team looked like trash. Bring Cade in, things look a little bit more balanced. Cade stays healthy. We're probably in purgatory where you're not good, you're not great, you're not having a good draft, you're not having a bad draft. It's in that weird, yucky middle area. But if I have to pick a side, maybe missing the playoffs. Maybe Cade's ceiling is a question mark. And I think everyone wants it to be big, and we don't know where he's going to land. So if Cade can take off and just magically Killian Hayes is better and we have our defensive pieces, we have our scorers in Grant, put me in for missing the playoffs. Let me be a little more optimistic about it.
Yeah, I think personally, I think we have one, at least one more year, hopefully only one more year of lottery pick Pistons. And then I think after that, you start seeing them progressively walking away from that. Like next year will be just outside of top 10, following year outside of top 20. And hopefully if everything goes well by the year after that, they're drafting at the very end of the first round to try to, make everything happen. We'll see what happens.
It's going up.
It's going to be interesting. That's the end goal. You want this to progress higher and higher as it goes. And I think they can do that. I mean, we have a lot of faith in Troy Weaver to be making these moves. The only thing is that we're very scared of is this team even going to look the same in 2 years. Like we said, Killian Hayes is legitimately the most seasoned player on this team. And he's only been on this team for a year and a couple months. So it just shows you that all the pieces are flipping like crazy. We'll see what comes of it. Speaking of it, we'll move on real quick to the mad scientist in Wing Wheel Nation, Steve Eiserman. Jay, youth is on full show for the Red Wings right now. Our two young guys are in the top three in points on this team. Right now, Tyler Bertuzzi leads the team with 15 points. He's also leader in goals. Mo Sider leads the team in assists with 9. But like I said, 15 points for Tyler Bertuzzi. Okay, that's expected. I don't think we all expected him to get off to this hot of a start, but it's still a great start to see. But right behind him, Lucas Raymond, 6 goals, 8 assists for 14 points. Mo Sider, 2 goals, 9 assists. Now look, one of those goals, empty netter. It is what it is. It still counts on the stat. Yeah, but also overtime game winner, which outweighs the empty netter. So these are two guys that are right there, right at the front. When you look at this, I guess there's no doubt we're enjoying it. We're absolutely enjoying it. But how strange is it? Because we're coming off 30 years almost of Red Wings hockey where youth doesn't play right away. It takes a while for the youth to be here. And we saw it the other night against Edmonton where against the architect as our youth was on full display against these guys.
It's part of me wants to protect myself because I'm like halfway walking into the party and I'm halfway leaving at the same time because we are conditioned to not enjoy youth and to not have talent be at our doorstep on full display at such a young age. So I'm enjoying it. Did I ever in a million years think that Mo Sider, Lucas Raymond, and Nedeljkovic would all be leading in their respective positions for rookie points and rookie wins and save percentage and all that? Like Nedeljkovic is having a season too. He's been benefiting from Raymond and from Sider. So I'm not jumping in yet. I watch this team with bated breath because I'm always waiting for the other shoe to fall off, which is we are garbage. We are not a full team, but damn it. Like Raymond and Sider doing what they are drawing me in. I'm halfway into the party and I'm ready to go ham because that's what we had as kids, right? Like that's what we were conditioned to enjoy was our Red Wing team. So I'm enjoying it. I did not see this coming. I don't think anyone really did, but damned if I'm not used to my history, which is Ken Holland burying talent in GR for way too damn long. So I'm a little damaged. Is this therapy? I feel like I'm in a therapy chair now.
Yeah, you're doing good. Just sit back, relax, take a deep breath. But when we're talking about this youth and we're talking about buried in GR, I want to ask you this because I had this conversation with friend of the show, Darren McCarty, the other day. We were talking about who we wanted to see kind of step up for this team. Obviously we're seeing Sider and we're seeing Raymond step up. Who's the other young guy? And he said Zadina, which is a very rare thing, but am I off? Am I a little weird to think that when he's given the opportunity, I kind of want to see Valeno doing it. Cause I kind of want to know he's the only real young guy on this team that I still feel like there's a giant question mark on. Zadina, we know that he needs a little bit of time, but he's there. He's going to be able to play Raymond and Sider, they appear to be able to do it. Now, again, it's very early on in the year. They got a lot of games to still go. No one expects them to keep up this pace because if they did, I think they would walk away. One of them's walking away with Rookie of the Year if they keep up this pace.
Easily.
But am I wrong that I still have a giant question mark on Valeno and that I want to see him more than the rest? Because we need to know, is this a guy that we can rely on or was it a mispick and we need to already be scouting?
You're not wrong. I mean, Tampa Bay lost their entire third line And I don't know if they probably still shouldn't be favored to win the cup. I think it's still Colorado. Like the players you're mentioning, and I throw Rasmussen in there as well. That's how you fill out a hot team. Not everyone can't be a top six forward. Like someone has to fill in that third line, and Tampa lost their entire third line. If you need to validate and solidify Veleno, Zadina, and Rasmussen, someone's got to be it. Someone's got to be on that third line, or even on the second line, banging. We're not a complete team. So I think you're right in wanting to know more. The two of them is not good enough. It can't just be Sider and Raymond. You have to have the guts of your team filled out. And we don't have that. And Rasmussen's the biggest target on my head. I love that you're watching Veleno because I'm watching Rasmussen. He hasn't lived up to his draft position.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think with me, the fact that Rasmussen's actually seeing the ice is kind of the reason that I'm like, I already know I'm going to see him. Veleno feels like, to me, like he's only got a certain amount of time to show us something before he's more than likely going to go back down for, you know, reasons. So when he's here, I'd like to see something because it lets me know, okay, if we need it, Veleno's there and he can do what we need him to do. Or if for some reason we decide Young is the way we want to go, you know that it's not giving up a spot bringing Joe Veleno to Detroit and giving him a chance here. So I like it for that. It's a weird thing. Like we're not used to seeing the youth do what the youth is doing. So it makes it kind of an interesting, it's a new thing. It's a new experience. So it makes it a lot harder for us to, you know, put our finger on what we like and what we don't like about it. Obviously Larkin missed a couple games. Reasons still kind of unknown. Back playing with the team though. Larkin's sitting here with 4 goals, 5 assists, 9 points. So he's keeping in there, but do you think as we go along, are we kind of running the risk of with everything happening, we might see Larkin just kind of get lost in the middle, kind of just become that guy who he never really gets back to being the top guy on the roster?
Yeah, because, I mean, so age difference is very important to me. And for Larkin, he's not that much older, and he may have gotten here first. But when you are getting outscored by other people on the team and they've got more, not staying power, I don't think that's appropriate, but they've got more pizzazz. They've got something that's better than what Larkin does. He's either going to be something better under pressure or not. And I've always talked about putting pressure on him. I think it's there. He's not like this. He's not the Zetterberg in the room and you've got Larkin like poking, hey, like you're not wisdom, you're not age, you're not wealth of knowledge. You're only a couple years older than these dudes, and I don't know. It's gonna make for some interesting conversations why one person's gonna be wearing the C and the other person is like leading the league in points eventually, which would be a pipe dream. But
it's very true. I think it is very easy though. It is with everything that's happening. It could be very easy for Larkin to just kind of settle in and get lost in the shuffle. But that being said, I would like to say that I think there's also a secondary opportunity for him here, that he, with everything going on right now, he doesn't have to be the guy. It's the first time in a little while that everyone isn't looking for Dylan Larkin to not only get 2 assists tonight, but also be the guy that scores a goal or two every night to keep them in it. He doesn't have to be that guy right now, and I think that's what's perfect for him. I think he has a great chance with his line right now to be the setup man. I think if he could embrace that role and go with that role, Larkin could be one of the top assist guys in the league because he's got Bertuzzi on a hot streak. He's got Raymond sitting right there. He's got Sider sitting behind him ready to help out. And he's got young guys shifting in and out every night with him that he needs to just embrace his role and be the setup guy. Don't pass up the open shot if you have it, but be that guy. Embrace the fact that you're not going to be a 50-goal scorer, but you can easily be a 70 to 80 assist man if you just want to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. Someone has to set up the scorers, and I love it. Mm-hmm. By the way, shout out to him the other night, taking the puck from the goalie on that nice little putback. I enjoy, like, well, by the way, how bad are you as a goalie that you can't clear a puck? That seems like day one training.
The bang bang play. Yeah. I think you're onto something there about identity, because correct me if I'm wrong, which I know I'm not. Our history of growing up, it was Yzerman and Lidstrom. You knew their identity. You knew their leadership. Yeah. You knew exactly. Larkin's got to grab something. He has to fill out those shoes eventually.
And I mean, Stevie Y scored goals, but Stevie Y was never like setting the world on fire with goals. He scored, but he didn't. He had a couple big years, but for the most part, what did Stevie Y do really well? He got the puck to Shanny. He got the puck to Sergei. He got the puck to all these guys to score goals. That was his thing. He was, and they've said it in everything when they talk about him. He was the guy that did whatever had to be done to win the hockey game. That's what Larkin has a very good chance of doing. You got the C on your chest. Why not embrace the greatest captain in sports history and model your game after him? It worked out pretty well for him. He wants.
He needs cups. To.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. He can. I'm not saying he can't score goals because he can. He can score goals. He's capable of it. But I think if he embraces the setup role, he's going to find goals coming a lot easier because these teams are going to think, all right, Larkin's got the puck. He's going to be looking to set one of these guys up, and they're not going to key on him as much. You got a chance. You're going to find some goals just from embracing the setup role. So I like it. I'd love to see it. It should be interesting. We've seen some games. They're sitting here right now at 7-5-2. By the way, that two doesn't matter. That math isn't real. Jay and I are.
And Russ isn't here to correct us.
Russ isn't here to correct us. So we're protesting the 7-5-2. It's just 7-5. But same question I asked you about the Pistons. If you looked at her right now, are we looking at a lottery pick Red Wings? Are they closer to a lottery pick Red Wings team or a barely getting in the playoffs Red Wings team?
I'm going to say lottery pick because it is an Olympic year. I think for rookies to not only have to adjust to an 82-game schedule, but then endure a 3.5-week break where you're probably – I have no idea who's going to go play for what country. I couldn't tell you. But that's a long – it's an extended season for rookies. That's a lot of traveling. It's a lot of back and forth. It's a long year. It's longer than normal. I don't know if they can withstand that. It's the Olympics break in February, I believe, for a month. That's a big pause where veterans can get healthier for other teams, and maybe they actually push and our guys get tired. So I'm going to say lottery pick.
I agree with you. As much as I'd love to see this team get competitive or stay competitive and have a chance, I think it's best for them that they be a lottery pick one more year. Get one more nice piece on this team. Because the way Yzerman's going, he's not gonna have to sit down for very long. So get one more nice piece added to the arsenal. We got a goalie down the WHL who won Rookie of the Month, so he'll probably be knocking at the door sooner rather than later. Get one more piece in there. Get one more year of it, and then I'm okay with them, kind of like the Pistons, walking away from that, going outside the top 15, going a little further up to the point where, it's because they're competitive. So I'm completely fine with that. I would have no problem with that. And I think I'm not asking them to tank any games, but I think at this point in the season, you'd much rather be a lottery team than a just getting in the playoffs, because just getting in the playoffs hurts you in the draft and you're not winning a cup. It's just not going to happen. There's too many other teams that are built up the way you need to be built up. So embrace the time and then keep watching these young guys grow. All right. We've only got a couple minutes left, but we can't be done with the show without doing the best segment of the show for degenerate gamblers, and that is Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
So Russ isn't here. Can we just put in like all our future bets and, stack absolutely. Like a 20-leg parlay for plus 600,000? Russ isn't going to steer us wrong.
I'll bet for Rusty. I'll bet for Rusty this week.
All right, so recapping last week, we all went 50-50. The Miami-Texas game, and then everyone had a different position between Green Bay, Cards, and Rams. So everyone went 50-50, so it's a little bit of a wash. Oh, my God, where did my notes go? We might have to cancel. Sergeant Salty, my notes were not here for what I picked. I built parlays. All right, so Eric, on the fly, I'm going to give you something. Okay. I already bet on it. I want to see if you want any action on it, all right?
Okay.
It's going to involve the Dolphins and the Ravens tonight. And what I have to offer you as I'm stalling for my app to load.
No problem.
Here we go. Lamar Jackson, rushing yards over 64.5. Lamar Jackson, touchdowns over 1.5. And the Ravens to win on the money line. Now, that sounds like it's going to be like plus 8, plus 600. Like those are stacking up some things. It's only plus 240, which when I saw that, I was like, you're basically picking the Ravens to go to town on Miami.
So I'm picking the Ravens to win, and I'm picking Lamar to rush for over 65 yards. And is it throw? Is it just any touchdowns, run or pass for him?
He's got to throw two. He's got to have two touchdowns. He's got to throw two touchdowns.
Throw two touchdowns. Yeah, I think I would buy in on that. That seems like a pretty easy, safe bet. I mean, I would say he's good for, I would guess that he's good for two touchdowns against Miami. I think that's a win. I picked them to win tonight in the suicide pool. So I would think that's a safe bet there. The thing that gets me as I'm stalling, waiting for my app to load, is the rushing. Like, I think he's going to do it, and it seems like a no-brainer that he would do it. But at the same time, let's see. Lamar Jackson, okay.
I can tell you his rushing yards real quick.
He averages 75 yards a game.
Yeah, 86, 107, 58, 28, a little bit of a stinker.
Yeah, I have it.
62, he's got, 51, 88. He's on
he's
there.
He's got 97. He's got 97 attempts for 600 yards, averaging 6 yards a carry, and he's their leading rusher, averaging 75 yards a game. So, yeah, I think all three of those all feel pretty – I guess while I have it up, I might as well look to hedge my bet. 13 touchdowns. See, that's what worries me. 13 touchdowns to 7 interceptions in 8 games means he's not even averaging 2 touchdowns a game.
So, no, but teams that are terrible against the pass, the last time I think he threw for 4 touchdowns in that game, I think it was the Colts. So absolutely. When he plays dog shit teams, he goes for it.
Yeah, I think I would take that one. That one feels pretty safe to me. I like it. And I mean, this should be a win for the Ravens. This is a Dolphins team that I don't think has any clue which way they want to go. And this is a Ravens team that right now their division is kind of up for grabs. You've got a 4-4 Browns team, you've got a Bengals team that's competitive but not consistently competitive, and you've got the Steelers, who, like I said, they're 5-3, but they're 5-3 by the grace of magic, because Big Ben is legitimately turning into a fossil before our eyes. So if the Ravens are going to win, this is a game they have to win to stay competitive. So yeah, I think I would take that bet. Yeah,
I know Russ would probably say no, and he would take the soft ice cream served answer, but we're just all going to ride on the Ravens tonight. That's what we're going to do.
Russ, if you don't agree with us, say something. Okay, good. Obviously, Russ, technical difficulties tonight. We can't hold it against him. He did everything. He literally did everything he could, short of, like, he put a phone to his face with a flashlight on it. You can't ask for much more out of a guy. He's got other things to worry about, and we completely understand. So my thanks to the Statman for making us sound a lot smarter than we really are. We always appreciate it. Excited for next week. Jay, next week, 4-year anniversary, man. 4 years of doing this crap. Next week, can't wait for it. Should be excited. My thanks is always to Sergeant Salty.
Hey, I like to know where the priorities stand, because I've not done this show for lesser reasons, because I've had other things pop up. Russ is committed. So we're gonna honor him next week somehow. We'll find a cute way to take care of the stat man, but I'm happy I'm here to support him as well.
Absolutely. Shows you how committed I am. I do this show every week. Every week, no matter what, I'm here. As always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is One Small Step for Us, One Giant Leap Back in Detroit Sports Broadcast.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.